time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday the 8th of November. I'm Ronan Berry. You're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up between now and 8pm, Caroline Hoffman of Leash Chamber Alliance will be along to talk about why one local business is likely to close its doors this weekend, particularly mainly due to rising energy costs. Now, Pippa's Parlour in Port Leash, believe it or not, was shortlisted for a Leash Business Award just last Friday evening, so really kind of paints a picture of the scale of the challenges being presented to businesses right across the Midlands at present. Brian Cunningham will be along later on to look forward to the Midlands 103 Hospitality Awards. They're taking place next Monday, the 14th of November, in the Midlands Park Hotel in Port Leash. And Brendan Cleary of Etiquette Planet Foods will be along too. Brendan's company were one of nine selected to participate in the prestigious Bord na Mona Accelerate Green Pre-Accelerator Programme for startup companies, particularly those that have, you know, a lot of focus on climate action and sustainability. Brendan will talk about that accelerator programme a bit later and indeed the products that that business are currently developing. If you'd like to get in touch with me here in the studio, as always, you can do so on 083 3010 103 by text or WhatsApp. That, of course, is powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. As always, really happy to hear from you. Delighted to hear your thoughts. And let me know, and let the Midlands people know what's going on for you and your business at this point in time. It's hard to believe we're only a certain amount of weeks away from a certain festivities due, isn't it? I'm not even going to mention it yet. It's a little bit too soon, I think. But first one to mention, it might get a prize from me. Who knows? Two people sitting in front of me now, maybe they might have a prize they could give out if somebody mentioned that. I don't know. It's probably unlikely. I'm pushing them too much now. But they're here to focus on really a very, very important topic. And on last week's show, I spoke at length with John McCann from MCM Accountants here in Tullamore about potential issues that might be facing some SMEs. We focused on things like the debt warehousing, where businesses can put certain taxes away, put them into effectively a virtual warehouse and begin to pay them from 2023. At a, you know, there will be obviously an interest rate applied to those, but it was brought in to give businesses that chance to stay open, to stay operational, given the effects of the devastating effects of COVID-19 on a lot of businesses too. Then you add to that things like the rising energy prices and, okay, the temporary business energy support scheme, the TBES, was brought in the last budget. John spoke about that last week too, but still, when it comes to being a business owner, you're looking there at money that you're going to have to find, you know, at a time when operating costs are at an all-time high, and you know maybe that those debts are coming or those bills are coming. You may be looking for money just to develop a new product, just to expand a business, or you might be looking for some money to get into your business in order to start a business in the first instance. Well, Tullamore Credit Union offer a range of services and support. So to find out a little bit more about that and how your business might benefit from those, I'm delighted to be joined by the CEO of Tullamore Credit Union, Paul Shaw, and by Deirdre Murphy, the Senior Loans Officer. Paul, I'm going to go to you first on this one. Tullamore Credit Union, first established in 1963. You're just about a year in the role. Just give us an overview of the scale of the operations that you currently have.
Well, I know we're talking about SMEs tonight, and we're probably on the M end of the SME, really, but that is what we are. We've a staff of, total staff of 72 people working in Tullamore and Kilcormac. We have 37,000 members, and we're one of the largest credit unions in the country by asset size. We have assets totaling 370 million. So we're a substantial, long-running credit union. We exist only to support the local community. And I think I mentioned at an event recently, we are well known as a personal lender, but we also do want to support business. We see the SME sector as a huge part of the local community. And we do have business products. Credit unions have been mandated by the central bank and by the regulator to go and lend to business and support business. So that's really why we're here tonight, to talk about that.
That M that you refer to in the SMEs, it is a huge part of the Irish economy. I think, remember looking a couple of years back, 92 or 3% of the businesses in this country are technically micro businesses, mm-hmm. which is between one and 10 employees. So absolutely vital to the sector. As well as being mandated, though, were you beginning to see that kind of demand or that need coming from the business community?
Well, the demand has been there, but we are dictated to by regulator. We're a heavily regulated sector. So we're delighted now in the last few years to have been given that mandate by our regulator to go and lend to business and support business. And I suppose it makes sense from government, from policymakers and from regulators that there is a gap in the market. There's a need to support business. There's been an exit of banks from the market, and not just in the mortgage market, but also in the business loans market. We're there to fill that gap.
Deirdre, as the senior loans officer, what type of packages have you that are, say, particularly tailored towards those SMEs, and particularly those very micro SMEs that Paul has just referred to?
Yeah, we would, I suppose, have a small, medium enterprise loan product, which would focus on supporting new start-up businesses and existing small businesses. That would range from 2,000 to 25,000 over a five-year period at 6.5%. So, you know, that would key in. Now, I suppose, given an example of payments, I suppose 25,000, I suppose, over would be 490 per month over the maximum term of 5 years under that product. We also, I suppose, would key in, I suppose, we do a BizPay, what we call a BizPay loan product, which would be availing of trying to look after revenue and insurance bills the annual, rather than try and do one lump sum and put people under pressure for one lump sum. We can spread it over a 12-month period just to alleviate the pressure of that.
Is that something that businesses are becoming more aware of, that maybe they can begin to look at maybe make doing the lodging their actual tax returns a little bit earlier and trying to get a line of sight on what may be coming
absolutely.
Due and then avail of a service
yeah,
like that?
Absolutely, yeah. And it just saves the pressure of one chunk payment just with inflation, with the year that's been in it. You know, it just makes it more manageable for them. It takes the pressure off.
Overall, in terms of startups, like are we still seeing a very healthy kind of startup sector out there? Are people actually looking at establishing businesses, given everything we've been through and the potential challenges that could be lying ahead?
Yeah, there is still the demand for it. And I suppose we would also key in and advise them to, you know, touch base with the like of the local enterprise board. The local enterprise board would, I suppose, be, you know, providing grants, you know, and assistance to start up. So that would help them with any business plans or projections that they may need for the startup business. And if it's over a 25,000 period, you know, loan that they're looking for, we have the unsecured business loan up to 100,000, you know, so that this is more for the small, medium businesses.
And just for anyone that might be interested, the unsecured part, just what does that mean precisely when it comes to taking out some loan for your business?
Well, you can go up to an unsecured business loan up to 100,000 over a 7 year period. So that, I suppose, gives more scope if they want a larger amount or if they're an existing business and, you know, they need more of an input into the business.
Paula, you're seeing that same demand as well. Obviously, it's, you know, as you say, when it's mandated now to start offering those services for business, are you seeing a lot of growth in demand? Business actually beginning to look for maybe finance in order to try to grow a business, or indeed just to try to put some level of structure on a potential maybe, you know, tax payment that could be coming?
So there's different types. I mean, we just spoke to Brendan in reception there, an entrepreneur at heart. And no matter what's happening or what uncertainty is there in the economy, there's always entrepreneurs who see opportunities in everything. So we're there to support those people. I mean, we do have credit assessment and we do focus on cash flow and we will stress test any proposal that comes into us. But we really want to hear the stories of these type of people that want to come in and have an idea. So there's those type of people who are always there. And even in the downturn at its worst in 2008, 2012, there was plenty of entrepreneurs who started business then who are thriving now. So it doesn't stop. Just, you know, people can write out these things and always see an opportunity. There's also, I think, last few months with rising energy bills, people are just finding that, you know, the current account is just a bit low on funds by times, and they're having to really think about how to plan their cash flow. And maybe while things were a little bit better in the last year or two, I think the economy was really cooking quite well before COVID. And I think it rebounded sharply when COVID, the emergency phase of COVID ended. And now this increase in fuel bills and the general inflation has just put a halt to that. So I think businesses are having to think about how to manage their cash flow. So that's where the likes of this, the revenue is the real one. I mean, the 16th of November is the date. There's 8 days to go. I'm going to really put it up to Deirdre now and say if someone comes in tomorrow with an application for a biz pay, we'll try and turn it around on time before the revenue has to be paid.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just a timely, a topical example of how maybe last year there was enough funds just to write a cheque and pay it. Maybe this year you have to think a bit harder and plan your cash flow a bit more.
Yeah, so and particularly, I suppose, if a business owner is looking and maybe, you know, unsure as to what an energy bill might be at year end or come February, you know, and that uncertainty is out there. So possibly a good time to look into those. But you mentioned Brendan Cleary, he's out sitting in reception as well, and his business is very much based in agriculture too, and that's a huge part of the business community around these areas. Again, you have some support schemes and loan schemes available for people in the agricultural business.
Yeah. So we're involved in a group of credit unions. Maybe Deirdre tell me how many. But I think there's
several ones. I suppose it was a collaboration with several credit unions nationwide that we would have, I suppose, back in 2017, went into this product, I suppose, which is mainly focused on farmers. You can avail of, it's for different products. It can be for farm machinery. It can be for the purchase of land. It can be for various different aspects of it. So I suppose that's more farmer friendly, you know, and that, you know, that's a collaboration with,
I think there's 40 or 50. We're struggling for the exact number. There's 40 or 50 credit unions involved. It's the length and breadth of the country.
Yeah.
The core product there has been an unsecured farm loan up to 50,000 at a rate of 6.75%. It has done really well. There's been huge uptake on it. In terms of support and the theme of managing working capital and managing cash flow, this year they launched a product for paying feed and fertiliser bills. And it's similar to the BizPay product. It's kind of seasonal finance. So we pay the bill for you and you pay us when you sell your produce. And as an extra support, worth mentioning that within the Cultivate product, the traditional term for that is always 12 months. It's kind of a 12-month cycle for paying for the fertiliser and feed and getting your produce sold. We are willing to be flexible within that 12 months and look at extensions of that, just given this is a particularly difficult year.
I think, again, just you think of the farming sector, the price of fertiliser and those type of materials, there is, you know, nobody knows where it's going. You know, it may drop, it may go up, but it's probably going to go one way too. So I think that extra bit of flexibility would be appreciated by people, because undoubtedly a lot of businesses are going to find themselves potentially, you know, looking at debt at some part in the next year. An area, Paul, that you're quite familiar with from your role previously joining Tullamore Credit Union.
Yeah, so I would have experience in managing, helping businesses and individuals get through areas of problem debt. And I think the big lesson I would see from it is that problems don't get better by being ignored. They generally get much, much worse. So for individuals or for businesses who feel that they can't cope with the debt that they have, or who feel that they're going to run into trouble, the quicker you contact your lender, the better. And that applies to credit union members and bank borrowers and everybody. The problem is so much easier to solve the earlier it's addressed.
And I'm sure different people can react in different ways if they're in that situation too. As you say, some people might, you know, withdraw and maybe go into themselves. There can often be almost a sense of shame around it, but it's a business transaction ultimately. So your advice really is engage.
Engage. I mean, there's no need to be embarrassed about getting into trouble. It happens to nearly everybody, I would say. At some stage in their lives, they bite off a little bit more than they can chew. The lender, it's in the lender's interest to help you out of it. The lender doesn't want you to default. The lender wants to find a way. It's in their commercial interest to find a way to get you through it. So it just makes complete sense. And I know it's easy for me to say, and when people are in a difficult situation, they just maybe don't act rationally, and it's just very, very difficult. And people will feel, you know, they had great plans and they haven't worked out, and there is an element of embarrassment about that. And we totally get that.
Absolutely, but often that guiding hand as well, and that proper way of maybe restructuring that debt, allowing you to emerge from it, and maybe then back to Deirdre for one of those loan schemes to maybe grow the business as well.
Yeah, so
plenty on offer. Paul Shaw and Deirdre Murphy from Tullamore Credit Union, thank you so much for coming in. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the handiest way of getting the credit union?
They can ring on the free phone number, the 1800 56 55 55, or go onto our website. You can do it by email, loans@tullamorecu.ie, and our website, and we'll come back to you.
And so if the 16th of November is the date you mentioned, if that's one, that's
the revenue deadline.
That's revenue.
And don't leave it too late.
Hopefully this evening's not the first time you've heard of that deadline, but if it is, as I say, don't leave it too long and don't wait. Paul and Deirdre, thank you so much for coming on this evening. Lots more to come here on Taking Care of Business, including the ice cream parlour in Port Leash that decided to close its doors this weekend, and we'll have the latest on the Midlands 103 Hospitality Awards that are going to take place next Tuesday, or next Monday evening. My apologies on that. But of course, that whole theme of businesses and the challenges they face, it's ever present. It's probably more pertinent now than it has been in quite a while. You know, we seem to have got through COVID and then lots of other kind of issues popped up too. But like that, and like as Paul Shaw from the Tullamore Credit Union kind of alluded to there, in any times, no matter how deep a recession might be or no matter how precarious the business might be, there's always entrepreneurs, there's always people who are always doing things, coming up with new ideas, developing new products, new initiatives. And a lot of businesses now are beginning to try and do that in a very sustainable fashion to one business that fits all those kind of those headings, and indeed many, many more, is Etica Planet Foods. It is owned and run by Mr. Brendan Cleary. Brendan, good evening and very welcome back to Taking Care of Business.
Thanks very much, Ron, and glad to be here.
Brendan, what do Etica Planet Foods do?
Good question. just to give you a bit of background, the last few years have been a little bit of a roller coaster, and I've had some scary experiences with COVID. With a startup food business, it's not a good time. I remember getting my first call back, what was it, March 2020, and I was in Austria trying to impress a distributor. And my son phoned me that evening. He said, you'd want to get back home because there's a run on toilet paper in Ireland. So that's when we were talking about borders being closed. Now, I had European ambitions at the time. So you can imagine what that did to that. So we tried to trade through it for a while, but it just got worse. Like, logistics started to break down and everything. So we're not here to be pessimistic. So reality hit, and I decided to close the door, hopefully for a few months. But as you know yourself, things just went on and on.
Yeah.
And then we were coming out of it last September. Where are we now? 2021. We had just sent samples off of a new range of products to Central Europe, and my site was on the Glenisk facility, and that was the morning of the fire at Glenisk. So, like, going from bad to worse. So anyway, I had to wait for my brothers in Glenisk to get back up and running, which, yeah, as you probably know, is still a work in progress.
Yeah.
And they've been adding on piece by piece, like a Lego building. And now the reality is I have to let them proceed and do what they have to do. But with my little project, it just kind of put things on total stop. Now, we're not dead and buried yet. I reckon we're looking at possibly a year before I can get back into production. So, where are we now? To keep myself busy, I got back into research and development with what I call environmentally sustainable foods and alternatives outside of the food area as well. So, one of these is sustainable packaging. So my twin brother, actually, Vincent, suggested that I sign up for the Bordnamona Green Accelerate program. And I was a little bit reluctant at the time, the first time it came around. But I've been hearing good things coming out of Bordnamona. They are actually taking this proactive stance and trying to promote new sustainable ideas within the greater Midlands, we'll call it. So I signed up and I was accepted for that. And that's where we are just after finishing it.
You were one of only nine companies selected for that, the Bordnamona Accelerate Green Pre-Accelerator Programme. Who was it aimed at in particular, and what kind of caught your attention with it?
They definitely have a green agenda. And I was just listening to your previous speakers and that, like, we are in trying times with, we'd say, modern run-of-the-mill business ideas. There's a new wave of new ideas which are presenting opportunities where people haven't even considered yet. To give you an idea, I came back from a trade show in Berlin, 2018, and I told my brother about this biodegradable yogurt tray, which I had seen. Now, I hadn't seen the yogurt, but I just, yeah, putting two together in my mind, I said, well, God, we could make a great yogurt tray out of that. And he said, like, once I explained the concept to him, he said, I'd be your first customer, as in Glenisk would be the first customer. So the company who I was speaking to, another small German startup at the time, unfortunately didn't make it. But the idea still lodged in the back of my head. And once I knew we weren't going anywhere with, or that we were parked with our food project, I said, right, let's revisit the sustainable packaging idea. And sure, like, that's bringing me down roads that I had never imagined, like, as in creativity and ideas and stuff like that, which were further, I suppose the best way to put it, enhanced on the Green Accelerate program. We were working with a good team of mentors, and they got us thinking out of our comfort zone and promoting creativity and things like this. So it was actually a good course to be on.
So the whole area of sustainable packaging, it was something that I think really got highlighted during the pandemic, particularly when, you know, when everything became disposable. So we tried to move away from single-use plastic or single-serving sachets. All of a sudden, they were the only way to serve people. But I used to kind of comment to lots of people, actually, some places you went, yes, they were using maybe biodegradable packaging, but ultimately it all went into one rubbish bin along with the cans and everything else. So we've a lot to go to. So can you kind of talk about any of the potential innovations, or where is that whole area of sustainable packaging going to bring us? Like, people probably would have thought biodegradable yogurt pots, like, surely that can't work.
Well, I can't say everything on air tonight. There's a few things I have to keep to myself. But there was one idea which was in the back of my mind going into the course, and it was to put a lovely rosy, sciencey term on it, you could say, call it 3D packaging. So this is building packaging using a 3D process. And you can now, a good example was after looking at the electric picnic this year on the news and the absolute mayhem what was left behind. And I'm not going to mention anything about the how it was run or all of that, but we do should have a green agenda. And I saw guys running through trying to pick up these tents blowing away in the wind with front end loader of tractors and things like that, and nothing was working for anybody. Now, I just said, we could make igloos based on this sustainable idea for an electric. Now, that's just one idea. And you could go from that scale. This is using the 3D process down to building either bat nest boxes or bird nest boxes. So anything in between, like, the world is your imagination of what you can do with 3D printing.
Yeah, I think when you mention things, and I suppose not just that festival, but I mean any concert, you see some of the after pictures and you're just going, sometimes you walk through town centres the day after a night out, you know, or when you, people have been out, and you just see the level of rubbish and stuff that's scattered. You know, even St. Patrick's Day festivals, I can never understand how, as a species, we can leave so much waste in such a short time.
Because we're used to other people picking it up after us. There's no kind of ownership of that plastic bottle or that Coke can or whatever it is you have. We live in what they call the throwaway society. Now, of course, fortunately, things are starting to move on. We've probably reached our depths, and now the only way we can go is back up again. So I think there is a growing consciousness in society that we can't leave it this bad forever.
Well, if you listen to any of the headline speeches from the COP27 summit there, like, I mean, it is stark. I mean, every year they seem to be, the warnings are getting more and more grim. But the consciousness, are people becoming conscious? Does the average consumer care at all about what packaging comes in?
Unfortunately, we still haven't got to that tipping point. It is coming, whether through stick or carrot approach, I'm not sure which, but it will have to. We've no choice, you know.
Yeah, we've no choice. But I suppose when it comes down to the consumers too, how is that going to work? Like, say, for example, is a biodegradable, so therefore more sustainable package, is it going to be multiple times more expensive than the plastic equivalent, or what changes that kind of ratio?
Yeah. Well, scale is one of the big drivers. So if you can achieve scale, then your prices will come down. But if you're using, like, on this particular course I was on, I was saying we could use various feedstocks, in other words, various raw materials for this. And, yeah, some of them are internationally traded, we say, recycled materials, but there's others such as agricultural feedstocks, which you could use and convert. Just to let you into an idea of what I was working on, like, if you introduce mycelium into, now mycelium is a fancy name for saying fungus, but into a feedstock such as straw, that will break down the lignin in the straw that you're now then left with something similar to paper pulp. And from that, you can start replicating cardboard for it, for example, and things like that. So that would put us into a new sphere of packaging, in the sense that we could, as far as I know, we could be the first organic outer case packaging company in the world by using agricultural feed or waste materials or secondary materials is probably the best way to describe it, you know.
And the straw then that would be used in that process, is that a byproduct then, or is it going to be competing then for straw that would be otherwise used in the agriculture sector?
Given
the thing of grain and the amount of grain of that we have to import just to produce food as well. So could we sustain that level of demand?
You could use a quality straw and grow mushrooms off it, and then the residue you could use for your packaging, for example. So you're getting the cereal from the crop, you're getting one use as a feedstock for fungus, and then you're getting the third option as a packaging. So you're actually adding 3 layers of value onto what was normally 1.5, we'll say, you know?
Yeah, and I suppose if you add even something like anaerobic digestion into that process maybe and ultimately produce a bit of energy, everyone's in the winner. You travel Europe a lot, a bit like some of your brothers too. Has that a huge influence on what you're looking at, or is there stuff happening on the continent that you consider that we're maybe light years behind in this country?
I wouldn't think we're, the Irish are quite innovative, I have to say. What I would say is their markets are bigger. Probably a little bit more advanced when it comes to consumer choices, and you have trends. So people, for example, Germans are taking this global warming very seriously. Long before I was talking to a member of a recycling company here, and he was telling me about their issues when it comes to sorting out other people's waste. And I was saying that the last time I was in Germany, I think I counted 11 different recycling bins in a home, and everything was religiously put into each bin. And that's where we have to go. Yeah. So if the Germans can do it, and we're becoming the second or one of the best in class in some areas, whether it comes to food safety or whatever, why can't we become the number one in Europe as well? You know,
you have to ask the questions like, you know, can we not begin to standardise packaging that, you know, does every food
agree.
Have to come in
absolutely?
Because interestingly, I had a similar discussion with the kids coming back from school today that were talking about cars, and I said, well, a lot of the big manufacturers now don't make the engines, and there's a lot of cars actually are made. I said, we could actually in Ireland be creating the chassis of cars, and then you just bring in the parts to make it into it. So I think a lot of it has to come back to that design and design, or you know, design out all those issues at design stage.
Well, some of those have been purposely done to mislead the public when it comes to packaging, like with various numbers on. Now, I'm not going to start blaming everybody else, but there's opportunities for the likes of me to find an innovative niche in the market and then say, right, here's my alternative, simpler, biodegradable, sustainable versus that piece of plastic or whatever it is, which, you know, is just made there to mislead you. Like, you do realise that 9% of the plastic produced annually on the planet is recovered. That means 91% is lost. So where is it? It's either in our seas, in our landfill, in incinerators. So, like, you might think plastic is cheap, but environmentally, is it? You know,
absolutely,
what's it costing the planet?
Yeah, I think as well that does questions around how much virgin material is used in the packaging. If it's recycled, at least it's one thing. But
correct.
Then that opens up a whole other world of how much water is used in the recycling process, and it goes on and on. So clearly the accelerator program was a success for you too. You had to pitch your ideas to a panel. So it looks like there's potential for what you're developing.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Brendan Cleary, as always, it's a pleasure. You know, hopefully we won't have 2 or 3 years of lockdowns again, and you really get to pursue these ideas.
Hopefully.
And all the very
I'll
best.
I'll have a better vehicle the next time I come in, Rona.
I haven't seen your vehicle. We'll talk
God love you.
Talk to you shortly, Brendan.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Well, it really is award season across the Midlands. In the past 2 weeks, the Tullamore Business Awards, the Athlone Business Awards, the Laois Business Awards and the Mullingar Business Awards have taken place. All of the nights, you probably saw it across social media, huge occasions, great pomp and ceremony, people dressed up, you know, and really enjoying that opportunity to get out again and celebrate what has been a couple of tough years for lots of businesses, and just to kind of reconnect with people and to just look at, you know, talk to people and engage with other businesses. And when it comes, though, to award ceremonies, and particularly we look at certain sectors, the hospitality sector, is a sector that was hit extremely hard during COVID-19. Even a lot of the debt that's been warehoused, a lot of it is attributed towards the hospitality and tourism sectors, such has been the scale of their challenges. And then we look at things like rising energy costs, rising operational costs, even the challenge of trying to rehire or find staff members after 2 or 3 years of lockdown after lockdown as well. So what sector deserves a chance to celebrate more than hospitality? I'd say none. So the good news is that's happening. There is an awards ceremony taking place next Monday night, the 14th of November, in the fabulous Midlands Park Hotel. And it's the Midlands 103 Hospitality Awards. So to find out more about what you can expect on the night, I'm delighted to be joined by event managing partner for the Hospitality Awards, Brian Cunningham. Brian, the hospitalities are back, and I'd say very, very much welcome.
Well, very much welcome. Good evening, Ronan. Good evening to your listeners as well. And hopefully you are all very well. Yes, as you rightly said there, so many award ceremonies, and congratulations to all the different award ceremonies right across the Midland region, and to yourself, Ronan, because I know you've been emceeing quite a number of them, and great reports coming from them. Hospitality awards, they're vitally important. It's vitally important to have a night of celebration, to have a night of engagement, to recognise, to reward excellence in each of the different categories in the hotels, restaurants, bars, tourism attractions, and so on. And of course, this one is particularly important. It's particularly important for the hospitality sector. And as you rightly said, the hospitality sector has been really hardly damaged, and in many cases is struggling to come out of that. We're seeing lots of different issues happening right across the country where people are trying to get staff, retraining staff, and trying to get back staff back into the industry again. And it's proven hard in certain circumstances and in certain areas, you know, more so than others. But as you rightly said, we are doing a night of celebration at the Midland Park, at Colm Neville and Anthony Neville's property at the Midland Park. And I know George Leaney and all the crew there are looking forward to welcoming all the many people at the sold-out event. It is important for me to say, Ronan, it is completely sold out. We have a waiting list a mile long. Apologies to anyone that didn't get tickets. Again, Katrina Lawler has done an incredible work on this as well. And in fairness, as we always say, when the tickets go on sale, the tickets go on sale very quickly. And we're delighted that the engagement that we receive from the hospitality venues and the sector itself, because that's vitally, vitally important.
It really is a testament to the sector that it's sold out, you know, such as the level of anticipation there. There's a lot of awards up for grabs on Monday night, though.
There is indeed. And I suppose it would be, there's going to be so many different awards. In particular, for me this year, my buddy in crime is not going to be beside me. We have done these awards for many years, as you know, in the Midlands. And that, of course, is Albert Fitzgerald. This is the first awards that he won't be there with me side by side. And I suppose we'll be doing a special tribute to Albert with thanks to Siobhan and Andrew and Stephen. We're recognising a special award to an individual who has created sales. So there'll be a tinge of sadness for us, Ronan. And I know you were very close to Albert as well, and many of the listeners and the team there at Midlands 103, which he loved so dearly. But again, it's loads of different awards, loads of different categories. The judges will all be there, all except Tim Husbands, who sends his regrets, but all of the rest will be there on the night. Of course, this is the only one that we can honestly say that basically from start to finish, the listeners of Midlands 103, which we're so grateful to, vote in a range of categories on a dedicated website. They can only vote once, and of course it's a dedicated website to that. The judges, or the shortlist is created, the top three to the top five in each category are shortlisted. And then the good thing is about this is the judges come in. They come in, they see the individual that's been nominated or shortlisted, and they see the business, and they hear the stories, etc., etc. Yes, there'll be winners. It's a really tough industry at the minute. It's really hard. And people have worked really hard. So it's really good to see people who have been working so hard getting recognised and getting rewarded in a very transparent award ceremony.
No, it looks like it's going to be a great night as well. It's a badly overdue night of celebration, and there's been a great vibe around the Midlands over the past couple of weeks too, and long may that continue, and I think Monday night will only add to that. So Brian, as always, thanks a million and all the very best with everything on Monday night as you go. And
thank you very much, Ronan, and best of luck to yourselves, and thanks to the listeners as well for all their support, to all the sponsors and to the listeners of Midlands 103, and of course Katrina, Will and all the team there who do it so well.
Thanks a million, Brian. We'll talk to you Monday night. So Brian Cunningham, of course, is the event management partner for the Midlands 103 Hospitality Awards. A huge shortlist has been drawn up. You can look at that very shortlist on midlands103awards.com/hospitality. Click on, you'll find out all the information you need about the judges and indeed all the companies who have been shortlisted for those very prestigious awards. It's not all plain sailing for businesses. I mean, it never was. There was always challenges out there for any business, but none more so than right now, given rising energy costs and even the challenges of finding staff, the rising cost of raw materials. But overall, it's the uncertainty that for once you could lock in your energy costs for the year. And, you know, if you overpaid, you had a little bit in credit for the next year. Now that's virtually impossible, because even if you have done that, when you come out of it, you don't know what the price is going to be. There's so many factors that are putting a lot of businesses at risk. One such business is Pippa's Parlour. It's a family-owned ice cream shop and it's based in Port Leash. And at the weekend, it put up a Facebook post where it basically said it was going to close its doors. They haven't fully decided whether it's a temporary decision or a permanent measure yet. But again, there was a couple of reasons given for it. Cameron Clark from the Midlands 103 newsroom caught up with the owner of Pippa's Parlour, Tadhg Muldowney, recently. And here's what Tadhg had to say when he was in conversation with Cameron.
Well, it's just about the rising cost in raw materials. Everything from ice cream to sweets to staff costs, everything has just rose fairly steadily over the last couple of months. And then the business also has gone down. Down to, I'd say, people are just pulling in the purse strings due to their own expenses and the rising costs with everybody's electricity and everything else. And it's just become so hard at the moment. It hasn't become viable anymore.
Has the time of year have anything to do with this? Obviously, you're an ice cream parlour. When the weather drops a bit, does that affect your business as well?
Of course, yeah. Look, we were under no illusions going into this that there was always going to be a drop. We felt that by selling other things like coffee and everything else that we would be able to see something through, but it just has completely dropped off completely.
How long have you been in business, Tadhg?
We've 1 year.
1 year, and it's in a good spot in Port Leash. It's on the main street. The building is very vibrant. It's beautiful looking, actually. It would really catch your eye. With a location like yours, you can't seem to get the business going again.
Yeah, well, we'd be in the centre of town. We're on the main street. We would have heavy footfall. We've a square behind us that's been recently refurbished, and they've put in outside seating. It's Port Leash is probably, I don't know if it still is, but it's one of the fastest growing towns in the Midlands. Just can't seem to generate. So it is what it is. If it's not there, you can't do it.
Tadhg, your Facebook post says that it could be a temporary measure or it could be for good. You're not entirely sure yet. How long are you going to wait before you ultimately make the decision to reopen, or if it gets worse, to close your doors permanently?
Well, we'll have to see with price rises, that kind of thing, how long they're going to continue. In the last month alone, we've seen 4 from 2 different suppliers. So, it's going to turn around to a case you want to pay 10 euros for an ice cream. I doubt it very much. It's just, are they going to level out? What's going to happen? We just don't know. So we'll probably just leave it Christmas and then make a decision in the new year.
How can it be fixed, Tadhg? Is it a case of Tadhg, there are over 100 comments of support on the Facebook page, and it's only been up for 13 hours. At the very least, it must be nice to see the amount of comments of people upset that the business is closing and showing their support for you.
It is, yeah. It's it makes it that bit harder, because we know we've had some very good days in there, and it can be hard to see families coming in there and they bring them joy. And we're from Port Leash, me and my wife, and we just wanted to give back to the community as well. It has been hard.
That's Tadhg Muldowney there from Pippa's Parlour in Port Leash. And as he's pointed out there, they're not sure where things are going from here. Now, the amazing thing is, or I suppose the shocking thing is, that Pippa's Parlour was shortlisted in the startup/emerging new business of the year category at the recent Leash Business Awards that were only hosted in the Heritage in Killinard last Friday evening. They didn't win on the night. They came runners up there to Sullis Eco Garden Shop in Port Arlington. But to even be shortlisted at these awards is a very prestigious honour. And then to hear 2 days later the business had closed its doors. Trying to find out a little bit more and see what the latest is, I'm delighted to be joined by the CEO of Leash Chamber Alliance, Caroline Hoffman. Good evening, Caroline. I'm sure the news was a bit of a shock to you at the weekend.
Good evening, Ronan. It's devastating to hear it and to listen to the piece where Tadhg has worked so hard. He's really invested so much into a brilliant shop on Port Leash's main street. It really is vibrant. It's an absolute gem. They only opened in November of last year, and it's devastating to see them close their doors, not only as a result of the energy crisis, but rising costs. You know, there is good footfall there, but people aren't spending as much as they used to because, again, households are also being impacted by rising costs. So it's really having a knock-on effect. They were shortlisted among six finalists in the Startup and Emerging New Business category, and they were so well-deserving. They really stood out to our judges, and they were worthy finalists. So it's really awful news to hear that they're considering closing down. I really hope that this is only a temporary measure and that Tadhg and his team do get the supports they require to ensure that they can continue operating as a business and continue adding such a vibrant offering on Port Leash's main street.
How has the business community over there reacted?
It's devastating. I got a number of calls yesterday morning about it, Ronan. Al's Fish Shop in Port Arlington also closed their doors on the 22nd of October, which was devastating. They're not going to be the first business, and unfortunately, you know, the feeling is they won't be the last. We have a very business friendly and proactive County Council. The budget was only passed yesterday. Thankfully, the rates have not been increased. The business incentive scheme is still there, as well as the shop front grant schemes. So I would advise anybody in Leash who is considering closing their doors or is finding, you know, paying bills and things like that particularly difficult to engage with the business support unit. Even the local enterprise office, if they've less than 10 employees, might have suitable grants and supports available, or even pick up the phone and call myself in Leash Chamber and I can see what's available to you.
That's kind of echoes what Paul Shaw from Tullamore CEO said at the very top of the show, actually, that if you are facing a challenge as a business owner, reach out to somebody. That really is the message that you're reiterating there this evening.
Exactly. We have the leashchamber.ie website. On that, we have a link on the homepage that will show you all the available energy supports for businesses. So click into that link. You'll see what's currently available and what's in the pipeline following Budget 2023. I've also written to the Tánaiste and the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment on behalf of our members, calling for the urgent need for additional supports. There's the Temporary Business Energy Support Scheme. This is very much welcomed. Unfortunately, the online portal being administered through Revenue, it's not yet available. And I'd hope it's online in the coming weeks, because the sooner this is online and accessible to businesses, the sooner they can get some certainty and some relief. It'll also be backdated to September and running to at least the end of February 2023, and most likely it will be extended.
Absolutely, and crucial for so many businesses too. And I think thank you for bringing that message in and just making that point again, that really it is about reaching out, because there's a vast range of support. Some might seem a bit complex, but they're there, and it's organisations like yourselves or similar organisations that can assist those business owners. Caroline, time is tight this evening. Thank you so much, as always, for coming on and for giving that information and those details as well.
Thank you, Ronan.
And there you go. That is the real challenge that businesses across the Midlands are facing indeed. And it must be devastating after just a year to close your doors and not really knowing. And it's that uncertainty again, uncertainty around costs, around potential outlays next year, making a decision whether you actually open it all or whether that's it. That's the end of that business or that dream that you had. But anyway, so it goes on. I will be back next Tuesday evening with even more business stories and more updates on those various supports that are out there for businesses too. And indeed, introduce even more entrepreneurs and people who are going at it and determined to keep going and do whatever it takes anyway to keep businesses going. Stay safe. I will talk to you all next Tuesday from 7 p.m. here on Taking Care of Business.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.